This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Over the Monster podcast. It's Brian and Dan. We don't have an agenda. We're just going to go. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? You're back
doing
home.
Great. I just got back from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It was a lovely 3 days on the island of Martha's Vineyard with my dog, who loves the beach, and I, who love the beach, and doing nothing except for beating my brother in Scrabble and losing to him in FIFA. Oh, and watching, man, the Super Bowl. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
It was like on in the background while I was doing things.
Okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what people say. People say it's pretty good until it was really stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the opposite of a lot of fondly remembered Super Bowls that were actually terrible right until the end, and nobody remembers those parts. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being in the Commonwealth amongst... So whenever I drive up, my brother who just moved back there has the same sort of reaction. I was driving up and I was probably nearing Providence and I saw a billboard for Miller Lite and it was a Celtics billboard. I'm like, oh my God, Boston fans. I was like, oh, cause I'm in New England now. It's like everyone's the same fan as I am here. So
yeah, that's true. That used to happen to me when I returned home. You would have like a sensory overload of like Sox hats for like a few days.
Why a sensory overload of nice people? People are much nicer. maybe it's strictly in the Cape and Islands.
I was going to say, yeah, people who live on an island paradise are nicer. I don't think people that live in Massachusetts in general are nicer.
I think that...
Did somebody like donate their blood to you? Like what?
Well, look, so I drove Sunday morning and I had to take a shuttle bus to the ferry from a parking lot. And I got on with my dog, who's very cute. She's a puppy. She's afraid of everything. The shuttle bus only leaves once. So we had to idle for like 15 minutes. And everyone on the bus was talking to me, asking me about the dog, asking me why I was going to the vineyard, talk to them back and forth. And no, that doesn't happen here.
People, you know, that's actually true. That when I moved back to Boston after like 15 years in exile, I did find, and of course, and so this meant moving back like as an adult after, you know, when I left as a teenager, I did find that people, strangers are chatty here in a way that we don't, you know, we don't have that reputation of being chatty. We have the opposite. But people are chatty here. And you know what, Brian? I don't really care for it. I don't want to talk to somebody in line at the grocery store. I don't want to, you know, I got even some of my neighbors. I recently moved into a new house. Not recently. It was like a year ago at this point. But when I had recently moved into it, the old owners had put in a sprinkler system, which I never had before. So I was testing it out and I was running it. And one of my new neighbors walked by and I had briefly met her. I'm totally projecting things onto her, but I got the impression that she was kind of like the neighborhood busybody. And she just walked by and she was just like, you know, she saw me with playing with the sprinklers and she says, the old, you know, whoever, Jake and Lisa or whoever house I moved into had those on a timer. They used to go off every morning. And I'm just, and I know she's just trying to make conversation, but what the hell am I supposed to do with that? What am I going to say to that? It bothers me. It bothers me when people just make stupid conversation with me. And I understand that this says a lot of things about me and how I do or do not fit into polite society, but I can't help it. It bothers me when people make stupid conversation.
You really nailed it when you said polite society, because that's literally what you're describing. I would say that, I mean, I don't think I'm projecting too much here, that if you are a little bit of a hater, Boston is, you know, that's the place for you.
Yeah. How was the ferry boat ride the rest of the
Well, on trip? on the way there, my dog, who is very, very afraid of everything, took a massive shit on the outer deck of the boat.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, it's a boat, whatever.
The waves are not going to crash over the boat, Dan. It's not that low to the ground.
Well,
it's going to rain.
You've never seen it in a storm?
I've been on it in a storm. I've been on it when they said everybody has to move their cars underneath, but then there are booths that are on the windows of the boat, and then there's little aisles, and then there's booths that are more inner.
Yeah.
And they said everybody has to move to the inner stuff because they didn't want there to be a chance. So there were too many people on the outer side so that it would tip, which has never happened as far as I know.
Yeah. Well, it's not in the Cape, but I mean, other ferry. I really love a ferry boat in general. I think my off the grid life plan, in the event that I write something that gets me canceled and I have to just completely leave my family and my life as I know it and disappear, my off the grid life plan is that there's a ferry boat that runs, I think, every other day in between Barcelona and Tangier. And I would be the bartender on that ferry boat. It's like a 26-hour trip. That's my off the grid life plan if it ever comes to it.
That's pretty great. It'd be better than doing the 45-minute back and forth vineyard trip.
Yeah, just Woods Hole to vineyard. Yeah, that would get boring. No, I want a 26-hour trip with all sorts of like backpackers and probably criminals trying to escape justice and you know, things like that. That's the life for me.
Jason Bourne, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, no, we would pick him up. I would be the one that would see Jason Bourne floating in the Mediterranean.
You know what would get you canceled? Writing about the Red Sox needing new uniforms.
This article. So yeah, so for those of you who haven't been on the site in the past 2 days now, so Brian is afraid. Jake Wallinger wrote an article on overthemonster.com today. The Red Sox need new uniforms. It's like a 500-word blog post. It's easily going to be our most read article of 2023. Already I'm predicting it. For the record, we clickbaited it a little bit. He does not argue that the home and away uniforms should be changed in any way, shape, or form. He just wants new alternates. What are your thoughts there?
I don't agree with his first paragraph, which I will read presently. Okay, let's get this out of the way. The standard home and away jerseys are iconic and perfect. Nothing needs to be done there. Got it? Great, let's move on. Disagree.
Okay, you know, I slightly disagree too, but you go first.
The alternates are just gray. I mean, sorry, the away jerseys are just gray.
Right.
They're very boring. That's
baseball tradition for the last 150 years.
Exactly.
Wait, you want to spice things up?
I want to spice things up.
So I don't have a problem. I would have a problem with your scenario. I don't think the Red Sox should move away from gray as a road uniform. I think if you're a pre-World War II team, you should embrace that aspect of your identity as much as you can. And wearing gray on the road would be one of them. I don't care for the current gray roadies, though. I really don't. I think there's something just a little awkward about the red and gray interaction. I really did like when they briefly switched from, like, I think it was 2009 to 2014 or something like that, when they switched to gray uniforms, but with the blue Boston as opposed to the red Boston. I really liked that. I liked the idea of, like, we're a blue team on the road and we're a red team at home. And I wish they would go back to that. My understanding was that a lot of people complained that just if you were glancing at the TV quickly, they looked like the Yankees because they were all blue in there. But fuck it. We're older than the Yankees. We shouldn't let the Yankees dictate how we look. We were here first.
I agree with you. I liked the blue on the gray, but most teams have gray away uniforms. Gray is boring. That's it. I don't know what to tell you.
This is extremely stale at this point. But what are your City Connect? What's your City Connect take?
Oh, they're fucking great.
They're amazing. I love the City Connect. Thank you.
I love the City Connect.
Yes. Oh my God. I love it so much.
They've worn them such a small number of times.
I know. I want them to wear it like every Friday night at home. I think every Friday night at home should be City Connect night. I think
that it should become.
Yeah.
Or Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Either one. Like,
no, I like it at night. I like it at night because it's like, it's the yellow, it's bright, it's vibey. Like, it should be a night game jersey. First of all, like, really just pops under the lights really well, but also just like it's an energetic, youthful jersey. I like the idea of it coming out on Friday nights when Fenway's a little more youthful and energetic itself as opposed to Sunday.
I do agree with Jake that the 1975 jersey and the 90s batting practice style jerseys, which are not button down, they're just
the pullovers. Yeah.
If we're going to stick with the gray, something in that style, I think would be perfect. But I don't like, the players might not like actually wearing those.
Do you think they don't like pullovers? I don't know about that.
I have no idea.
Who wouldn't prefer, like, comfort-wise? I mean, I said this in the office Slack. I've long had a theory about soccer jerseys, that a huge part of the reason why you see so many soccer jerseys is not simply because it's by far the most popular sport in the world, but just that because they're so much easier to wear than any other sports jersey. Like, if you ever threw on a basketball jersey and went to a coffee shop, you would spend the entire time sitting there feeling like a fucking idiot. And a baseball jersey is only makes you feel slightly less stupid because it's still too big to wear and it's got the buttons and it sticks out and it's loud. You can throw on a soccer jersey and go anywhere because it just looks like a shirt. And I think if baseball jerseys switched to pullover style, like, you would have the same effect. Like, am I wearing a jersey? Yes, but it's really just a shirt. I can wear this anywhere.
I love that. And that would help split the difference between the jersey and the jersey.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, you know, for whatever reason, I've never really cared for a jersey. It lies. It's a piece of clothing that lies to you.
I think that one thing that could help everything in the away jersey is if you designed it as such that you wore the red hats with the blue bills. Because those hats are gorgeous.
Yeah. It is surprising that they haven't brought those hats back.
But Jake is wrong about the St. Patrick's Day jerseys. I don't care for those. And the 1908 jersey is just ridiculous. So I'm giving Jake a 60 on this test.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I agree. The 1908 jersey, the sock on a jersey just looks really dumb to me. It looks really, really dumb. And it also, it reminds me of the reason why the Red Sox are called the Red Sox. And I don't care for the history of it. I don't know how much you know about the history of this. They were not named the Red Sox simply because they wore Red Sox. I mean, it wasn't like an organic thing that popped up, which is what most people assume. Most people assume that with a team with this name, with it being that old, they were like, well, they must have just, you know, most people know that they initially didn't have nicknames. They were just the Boston American League Baseball Club. So I think most people assume that, like, oh, well, they must have worn Red Sox back in the day. And so people called them the Red Sox. That's not true. They didn't have a name. But the crosstown pre-Boston Braves did wear Red Sox and were called the Red Sox for that reason, colloquially. And then one year, I think it must have been 1908, the Braves changed their uniforms, stopped wearing Red Sox. And Harry Frazee said, I like that name, and just adopted it. Not only started wearing Red Sox, but then like drew a goddamn sock on the jersey, which is weird to draw a sock on a shirt, for one thing. That's just weird in general. And I hate the way that they were just like, the Braves stopped wearing Red Sox and they were just like, no, this is us now. It's a bad origin story for the name of the Boston Red Sox.
Well, it's like the Democratic Party. They saw the Republicans and they're like, we're Democratic Republicans.
Yeah,
and Republicans are like, oh, Jesus Christ, it's the same name. The one thing I'll give, I have against the name Red Sox.
The Democratic Republicans came first, FYI, though. I do want to.
Oh, okay. That. Okay.
Okay. We want to talk about that.
But the one thing that bothers me as a writer is that, as you know, you really have to write around like adding possessives to Red Sox players.
Yeah. Yeah.
A player on the Red Sox.
We solved this. We solved this a month ago. They're townies. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're townies. The Red Sox are the old town team. Boston is the old town. And a player who plays for the Red Sox is not a Soxer. He's a townie.
Well, but here's the thing. They can still be named the Red Sox. They'll be like the Canadians, where you can call them the Habs.
Yes.
So they're just, it'll be interchangeable, even if they don't mean anything the same.
And that would be an organic name. That's what I like about it, just as the Habs is, which, where did that come from? That came from just because, like, they were all like hometown.
I believe it's Les, day, right? Les Habitants.
Yeah. Les Habitants. Yeah. I think they were all like from, at one point, their team was like mostly made up of kids like from Montreal. I think that's where it came from. That's a wonderful origin story for a nickname.
Yeah. But fuck the Canadians.
Yeah. Fair enough. I don't really follow.
Great sweaters, though. But I mean, what you hit on with soccer is that in a way that is not true of American sports, soccer is sort of about fashion, which is weird because they have all the ads on the jerseys. But soccer players are typically like the size and build roughly of like normal people.
Mm-hmm. Not the build part.
Not
underneath the jersey.
Right. Exactly. Like the core is probably a little bit stronger on the players, but they're made to fit people of average size.
Yes. Yes.
That is true. Look good on them.
Yeah. Which should work for baseball too. I mean, they're, you know, baseball is a little unique in that there is no prototypical body type. You know, for baseball, you can be just as effective looking like Mookie Betts as you can looking like David Ortiz. So in that sense, like, baseball should have a competitive advantage in the apparel world, because theoretically you should be able to wear a baseball jersey no matter how you look, because players look vastly different from each other.
And see, I find that football has the advantage because beyond all of them, it's the sport where it's like, yeah, it's not supposed to fit. It's supposed to be big and just go over your body.
It's supposed to be big and stupid, yeah. But it also, but again, that's what makes it look big and stupid. And if you're going to Buffalo Wild Wings on Sunday, sure, you can put on a jersey. You can't wear a football jersey in any other context but at Buffalo Wild Wings.
You can, but here's my specifications for when it's okay to, how it's okay to wear a jersey. It has to be a stupid jersey of like a long retired player who played one season on, the more obscure, the better. Like, I don't want to see people walking around with Tom Brady jerseys. We get it.
Yeah.
But you're walking around with a, maybe like a Kevin Falk jersey. Give it to me, baby. Then I know you're interesting. You got some stuff going. Like in New York, get people with like a Jason Sehorn jersey that's like 25 years old. I'm like, all right, I respect it. That's ridiculous. I don't know what you're doing.
Maybe this should have been what we did this episode. We should have drafted what are the best Red Sox jerseys to wear from the 2023 team.
Nah, let's leave it to the pod on Lansdowne, guys.
Yeah, that is more than I actually, and I have to admit too, I only own one single Red Sox jersey and I rarely wear it. I only own an Ortiz jersey. And I almost never wear it. And I do think so. I think this stems from my upbringing. I don't know if you had this experience too, but in the 90s, almost nobody wore jerseys at all. And there are definitely certain segments, and I'll use my dad as an example of this. My dad is a huge Red Sox fan, goes to games whenever he can, but like would not be caught dead wearing Red Sox apparel to a Red Sox game. And a few times in my life when I was younger and I would go and I would throw a jersey on, he would kind of like roll his eyes at me because he thought, to him, and I think a lot of people from his generation felt this way, like wearing a jersey to a game was kind of like an embarrassing level of homerism almost.
Weird.
I don't know if you've ever experienced that with some old New Englanders, but
I felt it myself. I wouldn't have said weird homerism. I would have felt that he thought it was like bringing your glove to the game.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Oh, for an adult, for sure, too. Yes, and I do kind of feel that way too, a little bit. It's like a combination of you're an adult, don't wear a jersey of someone who's 25 years old. And then also I think like his idea of being a Red Sox fan is being someone who's like smart about the team and clear eyed about the team and cynical when he needs to be cynical and happy when he needs to be happy. And so like the idea of just sort of, you know, wearing your fandom literally on your sleeve like that always seemed kind of weird to him.
That's fair. I mean, I was actually thinking of writing a piece for the website.
Were you?
Like, yeah.
That's cool. Great right. day. Wow. What?
But it's along this. I was going to say, I'm going to buy my last jersey. I'm going to buy the jersey that's going to take me.
Oh, I like
through.
This.
I like this one still, but I never wear it.
Yeah.
It would just be almost certainly would be like the 90s batting practice jersey for Pedro Martinez.
I mean, that's a hell of a way to go out.
Right. So just be like, that's it. I'm not buying jerseys anymore because it's ridiculous. The players move all the time. And I'm, as you said, 20 years older than most of these guys.
Yeah.
Seems a little silly. So I've thought about it, but I don't have any money right now. So that's why I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Those are probably hard to come by too. Although maybe they're not. Maybe they're
no,
just
you go on like Mitchell and Ness. It's all, and then the Cooperstown collection, the for 47 brand, it's all made for people our age to spend the money on the shit they couldn't buy before or updated versions. Now, I will say I have a great Patriots fake retro, like 40s jersey, or like it's not a jersey, it's awesome. It doesn't look like it looks like a very cool sweatshirt. And that's the sort of area I'm in right now. But
now, is it like cut off at the stomach? Because that's the other, that's the weird thing about old football jerseys. The ones ends big. And my dad did have, to bring my dad back into the pod, he did have, when I was a kid, it wasn't like a Patriots jersey. It was just like generic football jersey that you could buy at TJ Maxx or something like that. And he would just like wear it, on Saturday, cutting the grass or something. But it was that old style football jersey, the way they used to be. And I would love an explanation as to why this was ever anyone's idea of what a football jersey should look like. But it was that kind that like cut off at the belly button. What the fuck was that?
Even as recently as like 5 years ago, Ezekiel Elliott, the Cowboys running back, was doing that.
Was he?
And that it's not the style anymore. He was clearly doing it as sort of like a retroactive style.
He took some scissors to it, Chris Sale style, and just did it on his own.
Oh my God. Speaking of TJ Maxx, my son is just starting to read, and he likes to read the signs of the stores between his school and his sister's school. And I finally got him. He was reading them, and then he kept going, TJ Maxx. And I said, TJ. And then the next day, TJ Maxx. TJ. And he finally is like, oh, TJ Maxx. He gets it now, folks. There you go. We got him. We got him.
Nailed him. He's a Maxinista already.
Yeah.
We're 25 minutes into this pod right now. We haven't talked really anything having to do with Red Sox news, but that's kind of appropriate. Even spring training started this week. And yet, as I was preparing for this pod, I'm looking for things to talk about, and there's nothing to talk about right now at all. And in fact,
no, they play Northeastern a week from the day people will be listening to this.
Do they? The next Friday is their Northeastern game. All right. So we'll give people the full scouting report of your Huskies. Run things down.
Hold on. You live in Boston, right?
I do. I live a couple of miles from Northeastern's home field.
I'm familiar with the Bean Pot. I know very well what it is. And it's this year, it's Harvard versus one of the bees.
It's not. So first of all, it's already happened.
Harvard versus Northeastern.
It was Harvard versus Northeastern.
And that's
the first time ever.
How is that possible? There are four teams.
I know. That does seem truly, truly insane. I guess it just goes to show you how much better BU and BC have been throughout their history.
Still.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely mind-boggling that could have been the first time that happened.
I hope it has to be the last pairing that hasn't been made. I mean, it has to be.
Oh, definitely, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are only three possible pairings: BU, BC. No, I guess more than that. What's do some math for me? Six? Is it six? BU, BC, BU, Harvard, BU, Northeastern.
It's one of those great.
Yeah,
three. I think it's six.
And then BC, Harvard, BC, Northeastern. Five. I guess it's five.
Okay.
All right. So that's how it works. Yes, it seems mathematically impossible that could have been the case. Northeastern won. It was this past Monday. Northeastern won.
Harvard knows what it did.
Yes. Although apparently Harvard's like a top 10 team this year. I do not know much about college hockey.
You tell Harvard they're top 10 anything, that's not their game.
No, it's not. And I do wonder if like do Harvard students go to the Bean Pot? I bet they surely don't, right? There's no way they do.
I would guess they do, some of them.
Like a couple of dozen? We could have found this out by watching the game on Monday, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was on the beach, Dan. I was on the beach.
Yeah, I know. Jake Wallinger, who we've already discussed once on this pod, one of our Pod on Lansdowne guys. He is a big hockey fan, and I don't know if he went to BU as an undergrad, but I know he went to BU for grad school, so I assume he's a BU hockey fan. But college hockey is weird. Growing up, I didn't know a ton about it, but I would watch the Bean Pot every year, just about, or I would at least be cognizant of the Bean Pot. And it was I was always kind of proud of the fact that, like, it was my understanding that, you know, BU and BC were two titans of the game, and that the Hockey East was like the hockey equivalent of what the ACC is for basketball. And I suppose that's technically true, except that I've since learned that there are only six conferences total in college hockey. And so it's not, so the Hockey East being one of the better ones actually isn't that impressive. There are only six conferences total.
There's my understanding. It's the Northeast and the Midwest. And those are the big ones.
Yeah, that's like it. Yeah.
And Minnesota, and Michigan.
Right. And my childhood understanding that BU was like the hockey program is actually like not the case. If you look at national championships, like Minnesota and even places like University of Minnesota, Duluth and Denver, they all have had considerably more success than BU. It turns out BU's up there. BU and BC are up there for sure. But it's college hockey world is a lot smaller than I thought when I was a wee lad.
If I'm inspired tonight, I'm going to splice Joe Biden going, Minnesota! And right there.
Yeah, save that for the Frozen Four.
Oh, so Dan, speaking of Joe Biden, you've talked about all these trips you took. We're staying at Coffees with Shitty Hotel. Was that in your capacity as an Obama aide?
It was indeed, yes. Well, actually, yeah. At the time, staying at Shitty Hotels was when I worked on the campaign. When we won, we started staying at really nice hotels. So still drank shitty coffee at the nice hotels, yeah. But got to save that per diem money.
I got to say one of my most prescient moments was I was a newspaper reporter, but I'd gone to the University of Chicago where Obama taught, and I actually interviewed Michelle in college because she was the head of the hospitals. Before his convention speech in 2004, the day of, I told everyone I worked with, I'm like, there's this guy speaking. His name is Barack Obama. It's going to be awesome. I'm just telling you. And they're like, great, dude. I don't care. The next day, they're like, Barack Obama, who knew? I'm like, I told you yesterday. I demand my credit. I demand it.
I have a similar story. So I was in the building. When he delivered that speech, he was in Boston. I was volunteering at the convention. I was still in college at the time. My sister lived in Chicago. And so she was tuned into the Senate race, and she knew all about him. And she told me to make sure that I didn't miss that speech. And so I did make sure that I went into the arena for his speech. And I likely wasn't the only person who had this reaction, but I think I did. I guess I didn't text her because it was 2004, but maybe I went home and AIM'd her or something. And I said, well, he's going to be president of the United States one day. 4 years later, I was there.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of being at like the snow game for the Patriots, which I was.
Were you?
Yeah, I got these. My brother, the same one I just saw, and he was in high school, and I was just out of college, and I got these two obstructed view seats. I think I told this story, where we got there.
There were obstructed view seats in Foxborough?
This was the last game at the old stadium.
Yeah, no, I know, but it was a single-tier stadium.
Scoreboard stanchions.
Oh,
and so we were right behind it. And when they said obstructed view, what they meant was you cannot see between the hash marks at all. So we go there, we sit down, and we're like, fuck. The two guys next to us, because it had been snowing for like 8 hours at that point, got in, and they were older, and they just turned and they go, it's too cold. And they left. So we just slid into their seats and watched the game.
Wow, nice.
You can see it fine from just two seats over.
Yeah, those guys missed out. Like to be a fan of the Pats in 2000 in fall 2002, or I guess it was 2001, with season ticket holders to that shithole of a stadium, and for them not to stay for a playoff game like that.
In their defense, it was really fucking cold, partially because the snow was. There's a lot of snow games, but it's not often snow is accumulating during the game. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely accumulating. So your feet were freezing.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're sitting, you have your feet in the snow. Like, I had three pairs of socks on or something. And I intentionally had drank whiskey in the last, like, because we got there at noon for the 8 o'clock game. And yeah, at like 4 o'clock, I'm like, I'm just drinking whiskey, but also I don't want to have to pee during the game. Like, I don't want to be on the beer runs and just like, oh God, I got to be like, no, I'm not moving. It's not happening. So yeah, I would say that's the equivalent of the Obama speech. And so
yeah, same thing.
So we did that.
I wasn't drinking as much whiskey, but I did during subsequent speeches, but yeah, neither here nor there.
Do you have a favorite Obama speech besides that one?
To be perfectly honest, I didn't listen to most of them when I was on the job. Because the way it worked, like basically how it worked is once he got on the stage, that meant that my job was over at that point. Everything that I'd been working for was done. So I would usually,
and you were a speechwriter?
No. I was not a speechwriter. I did what's called political advance. Which meant that basically I was on the team. I mean, we were a massive team and there were many, many, many of us and we were all over the place. But we would get sent to wherever during the campaign, we would get sent to wherever he was going to go like 5 or 6 days before. And so they would just fly us out to Columbus, Ohio, and they would say, okay, we want to do a rally. The rally is going to be Friday somewhere between 4 and 8 p.m. and we want to shoot for 15,000 people. Or, you know, that somewhere else they'd be like, okay, this, we want to do a town hall with 3,000 people. Or, you know, it'd be just like purely a media hit or something like that. And so our job would be to just for the next 5 or 6 days plan absolutely everything that needed to be done in order to make that 16,000 person rally happen. And then I had the same job in the administration effectively, except instead of going to Sandusky, Ohio, now I was like going to Beijing and Istanbul and London to do it. And instead of staying in the Hampton Inn, I was staying in like the Conrad Hilton and stuff like that. So
did you do any advance work on his vacations?
I never got the vacations because I'll tell you why, because there's a colleague of mine, Mike Brush, who's also a New Englander and a native Red Sox fan. Mike Brush was a really, really, really good golfer and I cannot golf for shit. So it was Mike who got to do all of the vineyard getaways because he wanted to have people there that he could golf with.
Oh, good story. There's a fair every year on Martha's Vineyard in the third week of August and it's in my town. It's the greatest thing if you're a teenager, and obviously I was. And so there's like an agricultural part, which is much cooler when you're an adult than it is when you're a kid, where they have like animals. They have like a woodsman competition. It's now that I'm older, I'm like, that's the cool stuff. But there's also a traveling fair that's exactly, you know, what type of thing it is that comes from off island for this one thing. So one day I was there. I think this is after Obama was president. I think Trump was president, but maybe not. Because Obama has continued to go to the vineyard like since he's been president.
He owns a house there now. He bought like an $18 million mansion.
Right. Like Bill Clinton never owned a house. He came when he was president, but he doesn't come after that, except for to ask for money, or his wife asks for money. But so the Secret Service guys at the fair are really... I got to say, when a president says they're going to vacation on the vineyard, it looks like the Secret Service buys 100 pairs of khaki shorts, polo shirts, and the Red Sox hats, the cloth ones. So all those guys, they have earpieces. And it's like, they're not inconspicuous. You can tell. And so one day I see them, I'm like, oh, somebody's here. Malia and Sasha are playing the Dunk the Clown game. The clown has no idea who these people are. And what does the clown do as a carny? He just fucking roasts who's ever's throwing the ball. Uh-huh. And Malia is up there trying to dunk him. And he is just ripping her a new one. painfully oblivious to what he's doing. I was like, that dude, this is the only context where that's going to fly, my man.
They probably got a kick out of it, though. Because, I mean, that's a tough life for a child. That, you know, that actually sounds like one brief moment where they were allowed to be normal. So
exactly.
They probably appreciated that clown's attitude.
And they were at the absolute perfect age to go to that fair. So that's a good time. That was the Barack Obama segment.
Barack Obama corner. Yeah.
Barack Obama quarter. You want to do vibes or do you want to?
I want to do one more thing. So like I was saying, so we're now in minute 39 and we still haven't talked about the Red Sox. And it's weird to me
that we talked about Red Sox jerseys.
We talked about jerseys. Yeah. Spring training has started. And yet there's no real news. And so I was surfing the World Wide Web before this podcast to try and get prepared. And like, what are we going to talk about? And it's funny to me. So I think we're gonna debut a potential new segment here, a prototype of a segment. We need to work out the kinks. I think I want to read you a bunch of headlines, and you tell me, is this something we should care about, or are there just too many people writing about the Red Sox? because it does kind of feel like we're in a weird spot where people are just desperate to find anything to say about this team right now. And in fact, it end up saying the same thing over and over again. So first of all, I'm actually going to read you, let's see how many, 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. So I'm going to read you a bunch of different headlines, but I'm going to start with five in a row. All of these are stories that have come from different outlets all in the past 2 days. Julian McWilliams in the Boston Globe. With recent exits, we're seeing a leadership shift with the Red Sox. Jen McCaffrey, The Athletic. Red Sox counting on veteran clubhouse additions to fill leadership void. Mass Live, Chris Cotillo. Red Sox shortstop fires back a reporter who asked if he has resume to be a leader. Boston Globe again. Pete Abraham. Rafael Devers has taken his place, including in the clubhouse, as the face of the Red Sox. And then a few days before that, Alex Speier in the Globe. He's a recruiter, a utility player, and an anchor. How Kike Hernandez got in the middle of everything for the Red Sox. This seems to be the story of the first few days in spring training. Do the Red Sox have a leader? Brian Joyner, is this something we should care about, or are there just too many people writing about the Red Sox?
This dovetails really nicely with the Obama discussion, because I have long thought, especially when there's a piece of breaking news and my feed is just 10 people, the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. There just needs to be a pool report.
Yeah.
There's going to be a Red Sox pool reporter. Team up. Now, this is not quite the same thing, but I'm talking for like transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Just have a pool reporter. You can link, you can have one account. Jen will do it one day. Chris will do it another day. Blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone else can. I mean, the thing about leadership is it's such an ephemeral quality that it makes it, you can't be wrong writing about it, because it doesn't, like, it exists, but it also, like, you can't hold it.
Nope.
It's just,
nope.
It is what you say it is.
You can't measure it. We're never really going to know what happens in the clubhouse. None of us are, including the reporters. We're not really going to know who the leaders are.
I mean, I got to say, this extends to us in some way, where I was listening to Pod on Lansdowne yesterday and they were talking about how they viewed the season and how they were cautiously optimistic, but sort of excited, but not prepared to be super let down because next year is a real year. I'm like, that's all I ever say. It's not like they're copying me or I'm copying them. We've all come to the same conclusion, and this is really scraping the bottom of the barrel time for takes in the absence of actual results. And I think that what you're talking about, now that spring training is started, like, these people are together. They're not producing any statistical content or media content for us to break down. So right now, all we have is, how do they relate to each other? So everybody is writing the story. How do they relate to each other? Obviously, I think we know this from years of watching it. You can predict who might or might not be a leader, but you, the only way to sort of pin that down is just start playing and see what happens.
Yeah, it's a completely useless story. It doesn't, you know, and it's one that's sort of just designed to get defensive quotes out of the players, I think, which is what has happened, particularly from Kike Hernandez, who was asked a frankly ridiculous question by one of those people. I do want to go on a brief internet rant before we get back to this, just based on what you were talking about, how, you know, a transaction happens and then all of the beat reporters immediately tweet it out and also write like a completely useless 200 word post and put it up and just, yeah, the Red Sox have signed Wyatt Mills, relief pitcher from Kansas City Royals. Mills last year appeared in 12 games with a 5.26 ERA or whatever. So putting the actual beat writers aside, there's another species of Red Sox Twitter person that really, really gets under my skin. And these are the Red Sox Twitter persons who are not beat writers. And they probably don't really do any writing for any site. They may or may not have a podcast. But they
that
hold
sounds
themselves...
like me. In fairness, that sounds like me.
Well, no
writing
no,
may or may not have a podcast.
That's true. Fair enough. Yeah, that part does sound like you. But these people, like, you don't, these people will hold themselves out on Twitter. They cultivate their entire Twitter persona and profile as like a Red Sox analyst in some sense, which you do not do on your Twitter profile. So they hold themselves out as a Red Sox analyst, but A, there are two things about this that bother me. A, the only thing they do is tweet. Like I said, like they're not writing anywhere. They maybe are on a podcast sometimes, but the only thing they do is tweet. And then they do a particular type of tweet that really bothers me, which is, again, so like on the day that the Red Sox trade for Wyatt Mills, they'll be the 10 beat reporters getting all their Wyatt Mills has been acquired by the Red Sox tweets out. And then this species of person will also come in and say to their 1,300 followers, Red Sox have acquired Wyatt Mills from the Kansas City Royals, as if at that point anyone still needs that news, or as if there's any value in just saying those 10 words and putting that out into the world. I'm not going to name names on here, but this is a class of Red Sox Twitter personality that really bothers me. Nobody needs you to tell us that Wyatt Mills was just acquired by the Red Sox. Nobody needs that from you.
You could just retweet it also. Like, is yeah, I understand the retweet. Beats are doing their job. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, but there is a discussion going on amongst people I've mentioned in a story about there being such a saturation of Red Sox content that if you're doing it, I would say arguably like the people you're talking about are I want Twitter follows for doing this. Mm-hmm. It's different. Or like, I want to have a Red Sox podcast so I can get famous. It's like, no, you kind of just do a Red Sox podcast. Like, we like talking. The Pod on Lansdowne guys like talking. Jake likes Keaton for some unknown reason. But your expectations have to be, it kind of can't come with expectations, but at least it's real work. And I'm not just talking about us, talking about anybody who does it, you know?
Right.
There is a saturation, and right now that saturation, as you were talking about, even among the beat writers, is this is sort of like itself a pastime. How are these guys going to get together? What's going to happen to the gang next season? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So all right, I would argue. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. I was going to move on. Okay. I'm going to move on first. I'm moving on first. All right. Couple more headlines for you. Tell me whether this is something we should care about. Here's two headlines that fell in the same category from Dan Shaughnessy. I didn't read the article. We don't actually have to talk about what it says, but just the headline: Chris Sale appears thinner than usual, but doesn't sound concerned about holding up. And then Chris Cotillo at Mass Live. Red Sox Chris Sale estimates he's 185 pounds. Doesn't think frame made him prone to fractures. Okay, so first of all, does Chris Sale actually appear thinner? Or have we just not seen Chris Sale in 3 years? That's my first question.
I don't know how he could appear thinner.
How exactly? Yes, I don't
especially know. When we're talking about the uniforms, they're not soccer uniforms where you can maybe tell easier. But I mean, maybe is Shaughnessy in Florida?
Does he probably
like looking at him?
He's got to be in Florida. There's no way he doesn't have that in his contract that he gets to go down to Florida every single spring. But yeah, this seems to be another thing that's picking up steam right now. Is Chris Sale thinner than before? Like you said, I can't imagine how he possibly could be. Although I guess, so like I said, this became a topic of discussion. And he did say yesterday that he thinks he tends to put on weight as the season goes on. Which if that's the case, that's kind of the exact opposite of what almost every other player says about the season. That it wears them down and that they're smaller in September than they were in April. But he says that he has three kids. So he goes to bed early and wakes up early. And then I think he says he eats a lot of things at 11 o'clock at night after games. So he, I guess what he was saying is during the off season, he goes to bed early. During the season, he eats late at night. And that's why he puts on weight, I guess.
So he takes care of himself in the offseason.
Yes.
His I don't think I got hurt because I'm too skinny shirt prompts a lot of questions already answered by the shirt.
Yeah. Well, in his defense, he was being flat out asked that question. I don't think he came in and said, "Hey, everyone, I'm skinny, but I'm fine." I think this is again, they're trying to find something to talk about, and we have to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I can see him being defensive about it. It reminds me of this won't mean anything to you when the Patriots and Jets played this year, and the Jets scored 3 points. They went and asked the Jets quarterback, "Do you take any blame for the loss?" And he just deadpanned. He's like, "No." And that was the last that was, and he was benched right after that.
Yeah.
It's a different scenario, but it's like I'm asking the question I know the answer to. I, at least in that case, he could have owned up to it.
Yeah,
I mean, Chris Sale's not going to be like, "I'm a beanpole."
Yeah,
his whole thing could be like, "What the fuck do you want me to do about it? This is just me."
Yeah, it is. And he did specifically say about the bike accident. He's like, anybody. He's like, "I hit the ground. Anybody would have broken a bone if they hit the ground." And I will say this. So I don't know exactly where the bike accident happened. I do remember when it happened. I listened to you and Keaton did a pod, and you both said that neither one of you has ridden a bike in like decades.
I have now. So I have subsequently.
You have. Okay, good. Because it's a great way to get around. I do bike semi-regularly. And not only that, but I actually now bike semi-regularly right past DC's campus. So I don't know what street he was on, but I have gone downhill on Beacon right past Alumni Field. That street is not in good shape, and it is pretty steep. And there have been times where I've been like, I need to slow down here a little bit. Like I could hit a pothole and go over the handlebars. So just to for me to get an extremely timely takeout here about Chris Sale's August bike injury and the brief online kerfuffle as to whether there was a conspiracy theory afoot and whether he actually got in a bike accident or got in a fight or something like that, I can vouch biking past Boston College is precarious, and I would break a bone too if I fell off my bike there.
My dad was a big cyclist. And like, I remember he lived in New Haven, and one day many years ago, probably early 90s, he was his group of his little pack of spandex wearing losers. Sorry. We're out biking, and he saw, who's this guy wearing a world champion jersey? What a fronter. It was Lance Armstrong. Just biking with their group. But, you know, good at biking, less good at being a dad. Yeah, it's fine.
That's
he's,
for sure.
He's not. Yeah. He's not going to listen. Anything else before we move on to vibes?
One more thing while we're on the media, and I'm going to have you see if you can guess the outlet that this headline came from, because it's kind of ridiculous. The headline is: Justin Turner hopes to honor Jerry Remy with Red Sox number.
The outlet.
Think about who would want to associate number two with Jerry Remy in this context, as opposed to Xander Bogaerts.
I am at a total loss.
Total loss?
Yeah.
That headline came from the old Nesson.com. This is going to be the next at tomorrow morning. There are going to be a couple of stories about this. There's right now, there's only one.
Cotillo, I saw as we are doing this, Cotillo saying, I despise writing about jersey numbers, but you have to give the people what they want. So look out for my story. And I had no idea what it referred to, but now I do.
It's coming. Look, we've discussed this before. I think it's weird as shit that he is wearing number two. It does bother me. Look, I understand. Like, I'm not going to flip out and go crazy about this, but it bothers me that they immediately gave number two to Justin Turner. And so I guess he was asked about it, and what is not mentioned. So there's a couple of things that aren't mentioned in the Nesson article about Justin Turner wearing number two. The primary thing that's not mentioned that has been mentioned on Twitter, and this is probably what Cotillo's article will be about, is that Turner has said that he didn't ask for it, that the Red Sox asked him if he wanted to wear it. That is not in the Nesson article, which states that he's wearing it as a tribute for Jerry Remy. So again, I don't know. It's like the amount of times that this Red Sox front office and PR office just steps on a rake for fun. Just it's just amazing. Like, why just are you guys doing this? Why are they doing this?
So my brother is not, he likes the Red Sox, but he's not into it like we are. And I was very pleased to see that he had sort of the same general take that all of us do in our sort of combined take of like, why are you so fucking weird?
Why? Just
like,
why?
Like, what is with the weirdness? We get, like, he's like, I get it. It was a rebuild. You didn't want to say it was, but everything about it, just so weird. Though I'm glad you mentioned that story because it changed the vibe rankings a little bit. So,
oh, okay. Interesting. All right, let's move into the vibe rankings then.
We will get to the vibe rankings after this.
Oh, good idea. Let's take a break first.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
And we're back. It's time to get into the vibe rankings. Here's how it's going to go, because Dan didn't do anything. I ranked players, 10 best vibes, 1 worst vibes. I just listed 10 players. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say the name of the player. Dan is going to guess where I have them on the vibes ranking.
All right. So when we're talking about vibes, just so we're clear here, we're talking about how excited we as fans should be about their upcoming season, how excited they should be about the position they're in, a kind of combination of the two. Like, what are you thinking about here?
We're talking about vibes, man.
We're talking about vibes. Okay.
We're talking about vibes. I think it'll be very clear.
You know, when you see it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. All right. So let's start with one. Let's go with Kike Hernandez. Let's start with
Kike. All right. Kike Hernandez.
Now remember, I need you to remember, There are 10 players. So there's some game theory going on here.
Okay. All right. My initial thought is to give him like a 9 or 10. Because as we briefly discussed, he kind of has been the face of the Red Sox this offseason. He's been everywhere. He is moving. He's getting a chance to move back to shortstop, his favorite position, the position he came up through the minors as. But I will dial it back a little bit, and I'll peg him at a 7, because he is also coming off a very disappointing year. And there's a good chance that he probably recognizes this. He's not going to get to play shortstop all year long, possibly. They've already come out and said that the plan is for Trevor Story to take over shortstop when he's ready. So I'll say he's feeling good. He's been vocal. He's playing the position he wants to play, but he's not going to be able to play there all year. And he's getting older and he's coming off a bad year. So I'll give him a 7 on the vibe scale.
So you middled it. I have him at an 8.
Ah, okay. All right. Fair enough. We're close.
Yeah. For the reasons you say that, he's basically won the offseason, but at the same time, he's not strictly a utility player. He's better than that, but he's not a superstar or a star, yeah. And the potential isn't there.
We actually, now that you mention that, Red Sox Nation could inadvertently be setting him up to fail, kind of, because he is like a lot of the more casual fans are probably starting to think of Kike Hernandez as a minor star. And as outstanding as he was in 2021, he's never been that and likely isn't going to be that going forward.
Except for in the offseason where he's like that on social media. And it's easy now to conflate the two things. However, the vibes are always good around him.
Mm-hmm.
So based on his pure positivity, I have him at 8. So I think was good.
8 is off the board.
8 is off the board. All right. It's going to be sort of obvious how we do this. Let's go Bobby Dalbec.
poor Bobby D. So you went 1 through 10 and not 0 through 10, correct?
There's no 0.
Okay. So I obviously don't know who the other 8 players you've picked are. So the question is it possible for anyone else on the Red Sox to come in to the season with worse vibes than Bobby Dalbec? The only potential candidates would be Jaron Duran. Chris Sale's vibes aren't great, but at least he's on the field, so he's probably pretty pumped about that. I don't know if you went with Jaron Duran. I'll say 1 for poor Bobby D. Other than Jaron Duran, I can't think of anyone else who'd be coming into the season with worse vibes than him. He had the worst year of his career. I mean, he's only had a 2-year career. He was one of the worst hitters in baseball last year, and now he comes into this season looking like he doesn't have a role on the team anymore. Although currently, as of this morning, he was still technically the backup middle infielder on the 26-man roster, because the only middle infielders on the 26-man roster who were healthy were Kike and Christian Arroyo. But I don't know if you saw, Yu Chang is back. They were officially able to put Trevor Story on the IL today. So Yu Chang is back. So now Bobby Dalbec has lost that position too. He's no longer the backup middle infielder. So I'm going to give him a 1.
I gave him a 2, and it will become clear when you hear who number 1 is, but I agree with you for every,
that's a tease.
For all the reasons that you said, I have him at 2, because there's not a lot to look forward to. So why don't you guess where Duran is?
If Duran is on your list, he's got to be.
He number is.
One. Okay. Yeah. There we go. Okay.
No. He's not number 1. He's not number 1.
Oh. Okay.
He's number 4. He's number 4.
Number 4. Look, we've talked.
You
are
this,
a Duran believer. I do know you're a Duran believer.
We've also talked about that. I think there's a quantitative difference in the amount of talent that and staying power that Bobby Dalbec has
with respect to a major league team than what Jaren Duran has with respect to a major league team. I think Jaren Duran has the tools. They're in there. And I think that the vibes are not good, but he, unlike Bobby Dalbec, does have a route to playing time. And
yeah.
And I think that there's a dead cat bounce possibility here that I just don't see with Dalbec.
I guess the counter argument to that would be that he, unlike Bobby Dalbec, has yet to taste any success as a major leaguer. Dalbec has, you know, Dalbec was outstanding in the second half of 2021. You know, so he's, I would say the vibes are worse for him because probably at the end of the 21 season, he thought he was on his way. He thought he'd figured he struggled mightily to start the season. They started platooning him aggressively, which helped. And he was outstanding in that August 2021. He had like 8 home runs in a month or something like that. He was hitting it for a high average, putting up good OBP numbers. It's safe to say that he felt really good coming into the season in 2022. And then for you to lose all that and for everything to collapse, for the floor to drop from underneath you, that feeling's got to suck. Whereas for Jaren Duran hasn't tasted that yet.
But the game, I mean, even in the very short period of time that these two guys have been relevant, the game has changed from a game that favors Bobby Dalbec's skill set to this year, one that very clearly favors Jaren Duran's skill set.
That is true.
As you're right.
We got the pictures of the bases. The bases look goddamn ridiculous. They really do.
As you say, I am... It's not that I'm a believer, but I believe that there could be a player in there. And I believe that more than I believe that for someone like Dalbec. But yeah. If you reverse them, I would have no problem.
I'm fascinated to see who gets the one and who gets the three on your list here. I really am.
All right, let's do another one. Let's do Verdugo.
Okay, Alex Verdugo. This is going to be another little mini story we see in the next 2 days. Alex Verdugo was called out by Alex Cora at the end of last season. Alex Cora identified him as someone who he thinks can and needs to step up this year. And Verdugo came into camp and is reportedly best shape of his life. He's the first Red Sox player we've heard best shape of his life. People are saying he looks svelte. Which again, I mean, we see these guys in street clothes so rarely that who knows whether he actually does look svelte or not. That was always David Ortiz going back to Jersey Corner for a second here. David Ortiz always looked, you know, pretty hefty on the baseball field. But whenever you would see pictures of him just like at the club or something, he looked like a brick house. You know, you would never have described street clothes David Ortiz as fat. You might have described baseball uniform David Ortiz as fat. So Alex Verdugo walking into JetBlue Park yesterday in a t-shirt and people going, oh, he looks good. I'm not necessarily sold on that. But anyway, he does seem to, you know, he said that Cora lit a little bit of a fire under him. He said he was injured last year with injuries that weren't really disclosed. So I think he is kind of raring to go, but he's also moving to right field. And if you look at his Statcast defensive numbers over the last 3 seasons, they've really started to tank. He's slower. His arm is weaker. Now, maybe he was out of shape. Maybe this is what Alex Cora was really talking about, that he wasn't in peak baseball condition. Maybe that's why those Statcast numbers tanked. But if those Statcast numbers stay in the decline like that, he's going to have a lot of trouble playing right field in Fenway. So he's a tough one. I'll put him right in the middle. I'll give him a 5.
My man nailed it. All exactly. Right. Exactly where I have him. It's not good. Yeah, you got the best shape in your life, but why are you in the best shape in your life? Well, because the manager told me I was garbage. You know, it's like when that stuff is coming out publicly, not a good sign. But I think the vibes, even despite all that, you know, I just have him right above Duran, and I think that's an obvious that he's above Duran. All right, let's go with someone you obviously love, Tristan Casas.
All right. It's look, I don't apologize for this. Overthemonster.com is becoming to Tristan Casas what Tiger Beat was to JTT in the late
90s. We are simps. We are simps.
We are. No doubt about it. My heart will be broken if he cannot make it work this year, but he is extremely confident. It seems like he was also trying to be the face of the franchise a little bit in the offseason. I'm giving Casas a 10 for sure here. I cannot wait to see this guy go to the field.
I give him a 9.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough. Give him a 9 because there's not much to say. No. I think I'm going to, okay. All right. Yeah. I gave him a 9 because he's great. We've said plenty on Over the Monster and we'll say plenty more. Everything is lining up for if he does it this year, he's going to be so popular. Mm-hmm. It's going to explode. Mm-hmm. All right. Justin Turner.
Justin Turner. Okay. All right. Now this is difficult for me. You put Kike at 8, you put Casas at 9. There's only a handful of candidates who could be the 10. Justin Turner, clubhouse-wise, is the vibes guy. And I know you're a big Turner believer. I, as we've discussed, am a little more skeptical just because of how bad he was in the first half of last season and the fact that he's 38 years old. And I don't love, again, I don't love what he's doing with number two. I don't get what he's doing with number two. So I think he's up there, but I couldn't possibly put him, give him the 10 grade. So I'll say he's number 7.
I actually have him at 6. Good, very good logic. I actually had him at 7 until you mentioned the number thing and I switched him because that's bad vibes.
It is. Now, it is bad vibes.
He is the good vibe, so
yeah. And I like he's going to again. I don't want to make too big a deal out of this because it's not. I'm not really worked up about it, but I don't think he realizes like he's going to hear this from fans on the field. You know, when in pregames when he's doing autographs and things like that, like he's going to hear people being like, "Why are you wearing number two? What are you doing?" I wonder
they
if
won't he's. They won't care the second he hits a double off the monster. I mean,
people aren't going to. No, I know people aren't going to hate him because of this, and I don't hate him because of this. But like, it's going to be a thing he's asked about, and I wonder if that has occurred to him. Really,
don't know. All right, James Paxton.
Ooh, okay. James Paxton has not pitched since I think 2019. Is that correct? Got injured in I don't know if it was his first rehab start or second rehab start last year. Completely unrelated injury, took only $4 million to re-sign, which a lot of people read that as a sign that he's not very confident in his health and that if he was more confident in his health, he would have gone out in the open market as opposed to exercising that $4 million option. But he's also got to be super excited just to be back on a spring training field right now and to be healthy at the beginning of the season. Let's see. 5 is taken up. 6 is taken up. You had Duran at 4, right? All right. Paxton, I'll say he's number 3.
That's where I have him. Maybe he should be switched with Duran. I see James Paxton is nothing against James Paxton, but when I see it, that the whole James Paxton thing is just bad vibes to me. It is. It also seems like it is.
How often does it work, first of all? How often does this guy who's got good stuff but hasn't pitched in 4 years and say, like, maybe I guess Brett Saberhagen, maybe a little bit that worked a little bit for the Sox?
Love Sabes. I don't know, but I mean, it's the same theory that led them to Michael Wacha, that led them to Nick Pivetta. It's like the same thing, but it's like the least inspiring version of it.
Yeah, frankly. It's the ultimate test of it.
So the vibe is not about him, just about the process. Like at this stage in the process, I cannot get excited about James Paxton.
Yeah.
All right. Yoshida.
Masataka Yoshida. Okay. Well, this would be another candidate for number. If we're just talking about fan vibes, I think that's a solid 10 from the fans. Let me walk this back. If we're talking about fan interest and excitement, it's a solid 10. But there probably are a lot of fans who are cautious and concerned about how his game is going to translate. He probably in the back of his mind has a little concern about that as well. I'm going to say you got him in there at 7.
Absolutely true. I mean, there are only 3 spots left, but there's excitement. It's a little tempered for a bunch of reasons. I mean, I think that him and Kike are two sides. Like, Kike is a really outgoing one who's not as good. And I think Yoshida obviously has not had large exposure, but we're excited and he could be quite good. Yeah. So I just put Kike ahead of him because it's the off season and that's Kike's time.
it really is.
Coming. It'll be Yoshida's time. And, you know, we'll see going forward. I'm excited. But anyhow, the only 2 spots that are left are 10 and 1. And we're going to switch the way we do this now. Who do you think is 10 and who do you think is 1?
This is difficult. It's like I said, it's hard for me to imagine anyone other than Bobby Dalbec or Jaren Duran being the number 1.
You'll understand when you hear it. You'll understand.
I mean, Connor Wong entered the offseason thinking he probably had a roster
spot.
Let's
start with 10. Who's 10?
You want to start with 10? Okay, okay. Well, there's Bayo. He's probably pretty pumped, except that it's possible he starts the year in Worcester just because of the starting pitching logjam.
I probably should have. Bayo's not on the list. He definitely should have been. I made my list quick.
I mean, well, I guess it's Devers, obviously. Why am I not? It's Rafael Devers.
Yeah, okay. This is the first time since the Mookie trade, or since not even the Mookie trade, since there were rumors that Mookie's been traded, that we have the superstar signed. We don't need to worry about that. He's going to be great. I have no doubt about it. Mm. I think the vibes around Devers now are as good as they could possibly be.
Yeah. You don't think he's at least a little bit worried about last August? When he was literally one of the worst hitters in all of Major League Baseball for a month.
No, you've seen the video of him where he's talking to guys like, you're always happy. He's like, yeah, I'm always happy. And I hit home runs.
And you know, that's, homers, yeah. Yeah.
That's what he Fair is. Enough. All right.
Yeah. All right. I'm not worried either. I know I keep bringing his last August up, but I'm not worried either.
I probably, if I was going to redo this list, would sub in Bayo fairly high on the list.
Yeah. Although, like I said, though, it's as of now. I mean, if all of these pitchers stay healthy through spring training, which is obviously a giant question mark in and of itself, it kind of, based on what they're saying, it kind of seems like they're going to start him in Worcester, which I will be extremely pissed about if that's what happens. But if Paxton and Sale are healthy, Whitlock, we know, is in the rotation to start the year, and I think they're going to let Pivetta stay in the rotation to start the year.
Yeah, I would happily swap out Turner, who's like – he's a vibes guy, which is why I thought of him. But I think Bayo has positive vibes.
He's got the Pedro workouts in the off season.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to guess who number 1 is?
Number 1.
I mean, number 1 in a bad way, folks.
Number 1 in a bad way.
If you've listened this far, you know that. But just to reiterate.
Mondesi is once again hurt to start the year. Connor Wong, like I said, I'm predicting Alfaro to win the job over him in spring training, so he's probably pretty worried. Is it Brazier just because everyone keeps making Ryan Brazier jokes?
It's Ryan Brazier.
Oh, of course.
It's just because his vibes are bad. He has the worst vibes on the team by far.
Yeah.
Far and away. I mean, look, it's not often that the entire media apparatus goes to Bloom and is like, what? Which is what happened. And look, I know the way Bloom is operating, but this goes back to what we were talking about where last week where people were like, in the early 2000s, like, oh, I'd take 9 Milton Bradleys or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. At some point, these are human beings, and people just Brazier's just bad vibes personified.
Yeah,
if he's not terrible at baseball, he's just bad vibes personified.
Yeah, Yeah, I can't argue with that. I don't know why I didn't immediately think of him.
Well, but that's why
you'll understand. He personally is probably pretty happy because
sure,
he still has a job. For some reason, he still has a job. He is just.
But you say the name Ryan Bejor, anyone, it's just.
And everyone just goes,
at least Bobby Dahlberg's like, oh, I love Bobby Dahlberg.
That's true. People are rooting for Dahlberg. Like, nobody's rooting for Ryan Bejor to turn things around.
Like, I root for him to get guys out, but like, I don't care about him. Like, yeah, he's that's made enough. Sure oh, that.
What in? I can't believe how obvious your numbers 1 and 10 both were, and yet I did not immediately get them.
Well, I didn't have Devers at 10 initially, and then I was like, it has to be him. This is part of the reason Pot on Lansdowne guys talk about it. I talk about it. The weight is like this huge weight has been lifted, and he's the guy. So those are the vibes. Do you want to hear my enemy of the week?
I always want to hear your enemy of the week.
It's the veterinarian. I had to take my dog to the vet today to get a vaccine. I brought the dog in to the veterinarian, which is right near my house. They're very sweet, very nice people. I walk in. My dog is very afraid of like going with people who aren't me or going with me in some cases. So they're like trying to take her to the back and she won't move. They say, oh, we can do it right here. I'm like, okay. Like, it's just a nasal spray. I was like, sweet. They just spray it in her nose as fast as it would take you to take a nasal spray. 1 second.
Was this the COVID vaccine, by the way?
No, this is just I don't know what vaccine it is.
Okay. $57. $57
for 1 second of spray.
Yeah, that's insane.
I went in there because the place I adopted from, which I found out, major puppy bowl supplier. It's all over their
Instagram. Oh, really?
Yeah, they're one of the major. They send a lot of dogs there.
They still do the puppy bowl?
Oh, yeah. Apparently. So
that's bigger. It's probably bigger than ever now. Yeah.
They like, oh, wait, you get a free consultation at the vet right near your house. That's awesome. I went into that free consultation a month ago and came back $600 lighter. The consultation part was free, but everything else. The
things you have to do. Yeah. I didn't realize that animal health care was just as fucked up as human health care in this country.
Why not? Yeah. Do you have any recommendations?
I do have a recommendation. This is arguably a lame recommendation, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's lame because I'm going to recommend a 19-year-old movie that everyone's probably heard of. So I'm not introducing anything new to anyone's life, but it's a movie that I actually stayed away from for a long time because I had heard it was bad. And I think this consensus is wrong and dumb and needs to stop. Last night I watched, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, early Wes Anderson. And, you know, I early on, I was not a big Wes Anderson guy.
I would say mid Wes Anderson.
Yeah, I guess mid. It's mid. It's yeah, it's post Rushmore, post Tenenbaums. I was never a big Wes Anderson guy. I think I'm sort of growing into him a lot more as I get older and as his project progresses. But my understanding, like this is, I had not watched this because it is sort of considered to be his worst film. I think that's the general consensus. I loved it. I thought it was way better than like Grand Budapest Hotel, which is the only thing he's ever done that's won anything. I mean, it's Bill Murray playing a scientist / pirate / world traveler. I mean, like, what's not to love about this? I think it was funny as hell. It was entertaining. I really liked it as, you know, and speaking as someone who writes fiction, this movie did something that I always admire, that I always struggle with, which is just that, like, at every opportunity, starting with minute one, they just went for it in this movie. And they're like, what's the crazy thing that can happen right now? Well, they start it with a goddamn shark attack. The movie starts with a shark attack. It moves on to pirates. It moves on to mutinies. It moves on to, like Bill Murray pretending he's SEAL Team 6 and raiding an island. I just thought everything about it was wonderful. And if you have been holding back on this because you like I did, absorb the consensus that it's a bad movie. It's not. It's a good movie. Go watch it and reconsider.
I saw it in the theater, and I think I had Wes Anderson fatigue at that point. And to some degree, I still do. But I did love, subsequent to that, Fantastic Mr. Fox is great. Isle of Dogs. Isle of Dogs is great. They're both animated, which I think is important because it goes with his style very well.
Right.
Animation and his style work together. My favorite is The Royal Tenenbaums. That is the one I like head and shoulders about above any other movie.
It's hard to top that. I did love The French Dispatch as well.
I didn't.
But that's extremely Wes Anderson-y. But I do. I think that's better than Grand Budapest too.
My recommendation, and this will tell you how up on the site I've been, is that a new podcast I listened to. It's called Pod on Lansdowne. It's really great, guys. I'm not just saying this because they're on our feed. They are incredible. They're really good. They started yesterday's show on the Red Sox talking extensively about 9/11. What else would you want?
Don't you hate it though when you talk to somebody and they're like, I don't remember 9/11?
Well, they were one of the guys like, oh, it was a daycare. I just remember going home.
I do kind of want to discuss this a little bit. In the context that they brought it up, Jake was trying to come up with a definition.
He was trying to deny that it happened.
Yes. Well, I wasn't trying to deny that it happened. He was just trying to insist that Bush
inside
was
job.
an inside job. Yeah.
Steel beams and all that.
But no, he said that the delineation between Zoomers and Millennials should be whether you remember 9/11. And I do think that's a good point. I think that's probably a good measuring stick. But I actually think within millennials, I have this conversation all the time. First of all, generational classifications are dumb and stupid. The idea that everyone born within a 25-year time span thinks and feels the same way is obviously on its face stupid. But there is a major, major difference between the early millennials and the late millennials. And I do think it's basically like if you remember life before social media, you're like an entire different person than someone who doesn't. And particularly, I guess, social media / cell phones, I think, or smartphones, I should say. Smartphones are really what changed the internet, I think, more than anything else. The fact that the internet was no longer something that, you know, you went into a corner and just casually perused for 40 minutes or so, and instead was just something that is always there right in front of you in your brain all the time. Like that's what really changed things. And I almost think that we need, like, we can't all be millennials if some of us remembered the pre-social media time and some of us don't.
Are you a millennial?
Yeah, I'm a millennial. Are you not?
No, I'm Gen X.
You're Gen X? Gen X? Yeah, I guess you are. Yeah. No, Yeah, I think, well, they say what? It started in 81 is the general consensus now.
Yeah.
I'm a early millennial, but I'm in there.
Yeah, I agree with you that early millennials are way more like Gen X than Gen X is like boomers. I mean, I will say, you say like, yeah, it's sort of silly, but the general classifications have existed for as long as they have, because they do fit fairly well. Obviously, very broadly.
Very broadly, yeah.
But the culture happens, and then it shapes people.
That is
people
true.
People are people. There's always going to be hippies. There's always going to be hawks. But, like, there are...
But to your point, like, I would say that the group of people who are born between 1975 and 1990, that group of people, which technically constitutes Gen X on one side and millennials on the other side, they are much more culturally similar to each other than the people born between 1981 and 2000, which are apparently all millennials.
That makes sense.
So, because again, I think, like, for me, the big dividing line is social media and the smartphone.
Yeah, I guess it's, to me, it's how we interact with that. And I mean, look, all I'll say about the generations is the Zoomers will save us all. Come on, Zoomers, do it. Save us.
We'll see about that. Yeah.
I'm not one who talks bad about the young generations. I'm like, no, help us. This system is broken. You fix it. We didn't. You do it.
Yeah. I just don't know if I have hope that anyone can save anything. That's my concern.
Well, no, but this is my way of washing my hands of trying.
Of responsibility. Yep. Okay. You guys, it's all you know. Go for it.
All right. You got anything else?
Nope. That's it. I can't believe we went as long as we did here today.
This is not talking about the Red Sox. Maybe that'll be our podcast in the future.
We are going to need a new name.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is probably the second to last over the Monster podcast.
Should we do a tease announcement? Right? Yeah, yeah. We will be changing the name of both the feed, and we will have to change the name of our individual podcast.
I strongly believe we should do a draft of names, or like we should do our name workshop on air next week.
We maybe should. I was going to put this in Slack again to promote Pod on Lansdowne. They had an idea. This wasn't an idea for a podcast name, but it's one I do think we need to seriously consider for the entire feed, if not our show. Only Fens.
Pod don't miss.
They really don't. They really don't. Only Fens. I was thinking
even though I never saw it on play, was Lynn Sanity.
Lynn Sanity?
For Fred Lynn.
Fred Lynn Sanity. Got
my it. My okay. joke. My joke growing up. The joke growing up was anyone who asked a Red Sox trivia question in high school, the answer was always Fred Lynn.
Fred Lynn, yeah.
Just say Fred Lynn. The answer is Fred
Lynn. I do like the idea, for at least for our show individually, it does make sense that to have something that sort of harken, maybe not to the Fred Lynn era, but it does make sense for something to harken back to maybe the 95 AL East championship team or something from that era of Red Sox baseball.
You've got to get Ellis Burks name checked somehow.
Ellis Burks, maybe Troy O'Leary.
Troy O'Leary.
Oh. Yeah. Let's see. What can we do with Troy O'Leary? There's got to be some Greek mythology puns we can get in there.
I was going to say, we get into Troy Gold. We can get O'Leary with the fire in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But that's for next week.
Yeah.
We've passed the hour and a half mark. That is Dan Secatore. I am Brian Joyner. We're on Twitter. You can find us. Thank you for listening.
Take care, Brian.